Today is Monday, July 25th, 2011. This is episode 193.
Countless Screaming Argonauts is brought to you by Shane Ryan and Seth Curry Saves Duke, a blog featuring sports analysis on the country's two most hated teams, the Duke University Blue Devils and the New York Yankees.
Welcome to Countless Screaming Argonauts. I'm T Fat P, the Fabulous Penguin.
And I'm Dragonfly. Fooled
and
you, didn't I?
Denali.
I'm sorry. I stepped on you, Denali. Do you want to say that again?
No.
Well, I mean, now we've introduced Denali. He's here. So, Max, go ahead. I know you have some stuff for him.
All right. I got a couple of questions. I got a box of ice cream the other day, Denali. It was Yankee Bomber Blast or something like that. And I saw another box, another Turkey Hill ice cream in the frozen food section. And it's got a picture of a moose on it with the name Denali over him. And it says something like Denali likes.
Yeah.
Did you have any knowledge of this?
Well, yes, I did. I'm fairly cognizant of where my name is in use. I'm still trying to get lots of money out of General Motors
for
their
truck.
Horrific use of the Yukon Denali. and that bitch Stephanie Meyer, she's using Denali in those Twilight tomes, so it's everywhere. I understand that it's a popular thing, and people will usurp, and there's not a lot that I can do about it. I actually think the ice cream mousse is one of the more pastoral, pleasant uses, so
sublime.
I'm okay with that.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
basically, we're talking about Moose Tracks ice cream that's...
Yeah, but it's not just Moose Tracks ice cream. It's it's
Denali Moose Tracks.
Denali, yeah. It's like a non sequitur on the box.
Well, you know, ever since they named that national park after you, it's been...
That's it.
That's a big park. Holy cow.
It is.
Or holy moose, I guess.
The next thing on my list... You spend a lot of your time in this city, right? So you might not have seen these things. But I live out here in the wild boondocks. And more I see purple triangular boxes hanging in the trees. Now, I was driving down the country road the first time I saw one, and I went, huh, that's like a party favor or something. And, you know, maybe it's a way for somebody to say, you know, follow these signs to the family reunion. But there was nothing printed on them. They were just there. And then I saw them, like, another week. And then I saw them in another place. And I was up in the Adirondacks today, this last weekend, and they're all up there. And I'm thinking, who was it? Jerry Falwell said that the triangle is the shape of the homosexual community, and purple is their color. And I'm just wondering if there's these purple triangular boxes hanging from the trees for some sort of political significance.
I think that it's pretty universally accepted that purple is our color, or rainbows are our signification. But I hate being labeled and labeling. So, you know, I've understood that some of those hangings are there to say do natural things. Understand that these are our trees and they're a great resource for us. So it may not necessarily have anything to do with a person's preferences, but more about keeping the Adirondacks the Adirondacks. And they truly are beautiful. I did not argue that. And that may be what you're seeing.
Yeah. I shouldn't say I'm wondering anymore, because I talked to a resident of the Adirondacks this weekend, and I explained my question to him, and he said, no, they're there to see if we're catching any of those borer beetles that are eating our trees.
Emerald ash beetles. Yeah, I just looked it up.
There you go.
So, Denali's out there saving the forest. That's the way I looked at it after that.
All right. Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah.
That's a nice way to look at it.
Yeah, but it really puzzled me for a long time. I thought, no, you don't accidentally get a triangular box hanging from a tree. Somebody put that there for a reason. And all of a sudden, they were everywhere.
So you got something serious, Max? Because I got an interesting one for us.
I've got lots of stuff. The next one is not terribly serious, but might be fun.
Okay, go for it.
All right. Well, accountants say the man who caught the home run ball that Derek Jeter smashed for his 3,000th hit on Saturday, a couple Saturdays ago now, will have to pay as much as $14,000 in taxes. New York media reported Christian Lopez caught the ball and promptly handed it over to the Yankees without demanding any kind of payment, and the Yankees gave him box seats and loot that exceeded $120,000. This is under the rubric, next time maybe I should throw it back. So the leaked question is whether it's a gift or a prize.
Right. Interestingly, I read about this.
Yeah.
And Mr. Modell, the owner of the Modell stores,
yeah,
stepped in and said that he would be willing to pay any taxes that this gentleman incurred because of this
Actually, I think I have a further update. I believe they offered, Modell's offered $25,000 because his college loans are above $100,000.
Oh, wow.
So the taxes could be anywhere between 9 and 13 or maybe as high as 15, depending on how the memorabilia is valued. But then the question becomes, if that's a gift,
that's right,
what is Modell's?
Right.
That's a gift as well. So there are rolling ramifications until somebody says, either I'm saying 25 in hand, and I'm actually giving him 43, and that'll be the taxes paid on that 25.
Right. Is that weird?
That kind of a thing.
It needs to be reverse amortized.
Yeah, everything the guy did was, you know, I guess kind of classy and kind of good. He's just he's a Verizon technician, and like he said, just trying to make a go of it. So,
yeah,
good for him. And I hope Mr. Jeter kicks in as well. I think he should.
All right, I got a follow up to this. They had a big discussion on Mike and Mike in the morning, where Mike Golic said the kid did the right thing, and Mike Greenberg said, it can't be the right thing, because there's nothing wrong with keeping a home run ball.
No, there isn't, but that doesn't make what he did wrong either.
No, it doesn't. But they couldn't figure out language to describe what happened. The best they could come up with was, good thing literally fell out of the sky.
Yeah, you know, interesting discussion. You're right. There would be nothing wrong with him if he decided to keep it.
Right. You can't say that's wrong. It's in the ticket. You know, it's part of the fan contract. If something goes into the stands, at least a ball, you have a right to keep it. That's well settled.
So that's a legal look at it.
Right, right.
You know, from a sports fan point of view, I think his giving the ball to Jeter was spectacular.
Yeah.
In that, I mean, you know, you remember when Barry Bonds was hitting the home runs,
right,
and,
right,
you know, shooting himself up in the ass and stuff, and you know, I mean, there was a big, big thing about how much that ball was worth and all this. And that's what it became. It was no longer a sports story. It was a financial story.
Well, here's my answer to that. When that ball left the pitcher's hand, it was worth $8.95. And when it landed in the outfield, it was worth $125,000,
$150,000. So, yeah, but, you know, from a sports point of view, giving that ball up, giving it to – because, I mean, Jeter had already said he's going to take the ball and he's going to donate it to the Hall of Fame.
Oh, did he? He also said, by the way, that he would take care of the kid.
Right.
And
so, I mean, you know, isn't that – in some ways, as a sports fan, isn't that what you want to happen? Don't you, Max, want to be able to drive up to Cooperstown next summer and see that baseball?
Yeah, but then I drive up to Cooperstown every other day, so it's no big deal.
Right, yeah, so I understand that. But, you know, to me, that's the sports
I felt good about it. Right, right. But the implication is, and Mike Greenberg, I think, had a point. Correct means the opposite of it would be incorrect, and he didn't do anything wrong if he okay, can.
Right.
I completely disagree, and language is about usage.
Okay.
And right has a lot of meanings.
Yeah.
And when in that usage, when we say the right thing to do, it is the socially adept Yankee fan baseball person right thing to do. Absolutely.
The ball is with its proper owner.
And I think that's understood by the majority of the people who will not force contextualize what he said.
I don't think he would say, well, that was wrong for him to do that, but I think, like Denali said, I think that we're talking about for the sports fan, what's the proper?
Yeah, well, when I heard it, I was sitting there with my dad, and I said, "That's great." So, yeah, that's sort of my emotional reaction to it. But Mike Greenberg's is, "Hey, yeah, I got something good here." I don't know. I don't want to belabor it. I just thought it was an interesting topic. I mean, you can bounce it back and forth. They were trying to come up with a metaphor for, like, the rest of the morning. I left. They were still arguing about it when I went to work. They didn't think it was like a lottery ticket, which I kind of did.
Because, I mean, you know, a lottery ticket, you're making a purchase. You're gambling.
Right.
This is a gamble. He just happened to be in the right place at the right time.
It was luck.
You know, it could have just as easy been the person two seats to his left or three seats above him that got the ball. I read this interesting article this week about wind power and wind farms, and there is a growing discomfort. Let me put it that way. A growing discomfort with this technology. In that we're seeing more and more people with the NIMBY approach, not in my backyard kind of thing. Now, up here in Massachusetts, we had a long, long, long legal battle for a wind farm that they wanted to put in
the bay,
the straits between, right, in off of Cape Cod.
Right.
And eventually the state won, and they are going to build this wind farm. And I can honestly say that when I read about this whole thing, that I was very, very much in favor of them putting it there. But then after reading this article, I started thinking about, and I don't mean to bring up New Mexico again, but I'm going to do it anyway. I started thinking about, you know, going to New Mexico and how I would feel if I went and I bought this house. And I had this great, gorgeous view of the mountains and the desert. And somebody came along and said, well, you know, we're going to put these mirrors here so that we could superheat water and make electricity. And then all of a sudden, one day, there's scaffolding and all this sort of stuff. And then right there, smack in the middle of my view, is a hot plate and a boiler.
Right.
You know, and it makes me start to think about how do we deal with this issue?
Well,
how do we deal with
we're not dealing with it well. It came up years ago with nuclear power plants. Same exact question. And it's come up since then with nuclear waste. We had it all settled that the nuclear waste was going to go in the salt mines in, I think, Utah. And the NIMBY people showed up and said, not in my backyard. Everybody wants to do some of these things, and nobody wants to suffer for it. It's the same with prisons, by the way. Same idea.
Yeah, I don't know the answer either. I know that I, as part of this thing, I was reading an article about this company that wants to put solar panels in the middle of the Sahara Desert. You know, I think about that, and I say, well, at least it's not going to block anybody's view. You know, if you're in the middle of the desert, it's not the same as this article about the wind turbines was specifically to California, because right. That's where there's a lot of this going on right now.
Right.
You know, but so it's we're not talking about, you know, we're talking about putting it in the middle of the desert somewhere. That's where I got the whole idea about me moving to the desert and then building the solar thing right in the middle of my, you know, right in the middle of my mountain view. But I think, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I would think that you could find places where it might not affect people's views as badly as...
Well, you know, the most famous of these cases probably is in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the bay or harbor, but it was right outside the Kennedy compound. And Senator Kennedy, who was a liberal and probably, I don't know for a fact, and voted for a lot of these environmental issues, was all in favor of wind power, but, and I'm saying this as a guess, but I know for a fact that he wanted it to not affect his view out in
right.
the water, you know, behind, I want to say Kennebunkport, but you know what I'm trying to think of.
Hyannis,
right. And for a long time, he was able to stop it. I believe those windmills are there now. We've called people hypocrites on this show before, and much as I liked Teddy Kennedy, a hypocrite's a hypocrite. You know, if you're for
right.
final environmental stuff but not in your backyard, then that's a
But it, to me, it's mindful of, like, what they do with cell towers now. You know, they make them look like make-believe trees and stuff like that.
And you know how that works.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, you know, I saw a graphic about how the wind turbines in Cape – now, I have to admit, I have not seen them in person. But I saw a graphic about what they would look like because they're like 22 miles or 11 miles offshore
right.
or something. And they're not the 450-foot-tall behemoth ones. They're smaller. And so you're not going to get the same sort of – profile issue with them, but they're still able to be seen from the shoreline. So I mean,
yeah.
let's call a spade a spade. You know, if you're going to NIMBY it, you're going to NIMBY it.
Right. And I saw one on the road this weekend being passed by a tractor trailer, and the base of it was on a tractor trailer, and the base of it was bigger than the truck that was passing it, an 18-wheeler
right.
that was passing it.
Right.
They're huge. They're big. And another
yeah.
thing. You know me, I like my birds. They're killing birds in upstate New York, these windmills. There's a lot
right.
of them being put in on the Tug Hill Plateau up here, and they're killing birds.
Right. The article refers to them as avian Cuisinarts.
Yeah. The birds can't imagine them. They're like, they see the thing, I guess, this is my theory, they see it, you know, up above, and they fly between the blades, or they aim between the blades, and they're looking down for rodents and voles and things. And the things come along and hit them on the head, and they never knew what hit them. But I've talked to the Audubon Society about it, and they said, we think we're losing a lot of birds. And we're talking about, among other things, bald eagles, raptors, big birds. Well, you know what? We get on the conservatives a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a liberal issue, and you know it's
are
time.
Are you suggesting that conservatives are not bird lovers?
No.
Seriously,
no.
You said You said it's a liberal issue.
Yeah, well,
I entirely disagree.
I wouldn't walk away from that. I'm not saying that bird loving is a liberal issue, although I have a problem with Ducks Unlimited. I have a problem with a society that's dedicated to the preservation of an animal by shooting it. But that's oversimplifying too. But yeah, I wouldn't call Dick Cheney, a grouse preservationist or a Texas lawyer preservationist for that matter. You know, he shoots them both.
To be frank, I think going hunting was one of the most balanced things that Mr. Cheney ever did.
It's true.
Look at wind power as one of the cleanest forms, and I think we need more of it. And I'm terribly sorry about the avian losses, but I want to see Survivor.
I want to use my laptop.
You need the damn kilowatts. Sorry about your egret, you know.
Well, I do think that environmental protection is a liberal issue. I don't think a lot of conservatives. Well, maybe,
I completely disagree.
Yeah.
And if you look at how they railroaded Clinton's EPA, like to say it's an environmental issue, well, there's two sides of it. There's
that's true.
The people who are getting oil out of the ground and all the, no, it is not a liberal issue at all. I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah. We disagree on that one. But I do think that regardless of what side of the political equation it's on, we need to find more sources of energy and clean energy. And that's one place that I'm very disappointed in this conservative president that we have now. He's just not doing enough. The first thing I would have done if I was him, I think we needed 1,000.
And by the way, I'm overqualified.
I know, it's true. I wanted 1,000 electrical fill-up stations. I wanted incentive for electric cars. But what he didn't do was have a national re-energy program, and we needed it. Now, in his defense, a lot of bad shit, surprising shit happened, like the Gulf oil spill, in the midst of all of his stuff. But
right.
And as much as I'd like to see Medicare for all, I just think that we needed a space program for national energy policy. We needed a new spectacular vision of how we were going to get our electricity 30 years.
And we haven't had that.
And we haven't had it. And
yeah,
that was
correct.
A disappointment to me. But we still managed to carry on two wars and extend Bush tax cuts. People say he's a liberal, but I'm not seeing it. But anyway, that's politics.
Sure.
Yeah.
So let's do our funny stuff and get out.
All right.
I'll go first and let you end on the laughers. I've got two quick fun ones. Okay, I don't know if you guys saw this in the paper, but a new Antiques Roadshow record was established this week. Did you hear about this?
No.
No, I haven't.
Okay, you guys are familiar with the Antiques Roadshow?
Yep.
Yes.
All right, basically people bring stuff to these guys. They hold it up and say, ooh, this thing is worth $47, or this thing is worth $100,000, or whatever.
I hate that show. I can't watch it because I
know love that show.
Someday, somebody's going to walk in there
with something that you gave him.
Yeah, something that I have that I had in my attic that got thrown out when I was 12, right. and now it's worth $1 billion.
This week, the Antiques Roadshow was in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And a man walked in with a set of 5 Chinese cups that were carved from rhinoceros horns that he had since the early 1970s. He told them that he had bought them for about $100.
Hmm.
They were established as a late 17th century cup set, hand-carved, at valued at $1.5 million.
Yeah.
And they said the guy almost collapsed on the set.
You won the lottery.
Basically. Okay, now here's a second one. And this one is close to our hearts. Okay, this week in Freakonomics, every week at least one of their blog posts is by somebody who uses the Yale Book of Quotations to talk about tracing a statement. Well, this week somebody wrote it and said, Yogi Berra has been quoted as having said, "I never said most of the things I said."
Right.
Is this correct? And the guy said, no, this is one of those things that Yogi Berra is attached to, but that Yogi Berra is what he calls a quotation magnet, like Mark Twain, where foolish-sounding quotes tend to be attributed to him, regardless of whether he said them or not.
Mm-hmm.
And then he used as an example one of Yogi Berra's most famously quoted lines. "Nobody goes there anymore. It's too crowded."
It's one of my favorites.
Is erroneously attributed to him. But John McNulty used it in a story in the New Yorker magazine, February 10th, 1943, before Yogi Berra was even in the major leagues.
Wow.
So he didn't say that, and he didn't say, "I never said most of the things that I said." And now I'm just absolutely...
That he only became quippy once he made the majors?
Well, no, but that's when he was quoted the most. He said that, supposedly, he was talking as a New York Yankee about a nightclub or a restaurant in the city.
He was talking about the riverboat at...
Is it possible that someone else said it first, but that Yogi said it too?
Well, that was the theory in the comments that were made to this, that they thought that Yogi actually probably did say something like that, and that
it's either
something that he had heard, right? Something that he had heard, or. You know, they didn't quite say it that way, but that's the way it got reported.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing. But it was interesting that it quoted both Yogi Berra and Mark Twain as being quotation magnets. We've talked about Mark Twain before, whether or not he said certain things.
Right, right. And we had a whole series of quotes, and I know we used that one. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, I'm sure.
That's Yogi Berra quote.
Not only have we talked about Mark Twain before,
we've talked to Mark Twain.
That's right, and he didn't say some of the things he said.
Yeah, I guess not. So, Max, let's go on the way out.
The only other thing I have to say, I've fallen in love with Angry Birds.
Hi, this is Miss Nicole of 8 Beer Sampler Productions. You've been listening to Max and T-Fab P, the fabulous penguin of Countless Screaming Argonauts, the podcast of record. Listen to their podcast adventures at csapodcast.blogspot.com or download it free from the iTunes podcast store. Just search Countless Screaming Argonauts. The boys love to hear from you, so email them at csapodcast@gmail.com. Finally, if you want to show your allegiance to the show, pick up some CSA swag and help make the boys famous. You can purchase hats, shirts, and mugs, along with other appropriate gear, at Cafe Press. Click the link on their webpage. And thanks for listening.